Have you ever been hungry, and I mean by that really hungry, to the point you didn't even know where your next meal was going to come from? I really doubt it in rich, comfortable, overfed, affluent America, if very many people have. Some have, that's for sure, because we have poverty levels and even starvation cases inside the United States and Canada, but proportionately, very, very few. Most people in this world are completely underfed, malnourished, and at the point of starvation. By their thousands, they die every single year. And mankind now faces one of the most incredible, unbelievable hunger bombs that we have ever been able to contemplate. The political consequences, the potential even for world war, are absolutely enormous. It's about time we began to understand in the United States a little of the contrast, as we saw in that opening shot, of the difference between what is and what is real in this world and the fantastic and unique blessings God has bestowed upon us. But for a moment, imagine yourself as the median man, Mr. or Mrs. Average World. What would it be like? First, throw out in your mind's eye all your living room furniture and television set, lamps, tables, sofa, everything. Next, smash your bedroom furniture, your box spring, mattress, mirror, chest of drawers, and your clothes closet. Save only one change of clothing, and maybe your dirtiest work clothes. Next, destroy all the bathroom facilities entirely. As you move to your kitchen, you'll have to disconnect and discard all those energy slaves of yours. Throw out the refrigerator, the stove, the dining table set. Discard all food on your shelves except for a few half-rotten potatoes and a few crusts of dried-up bread. Throw out the daily protein staples such as milk, meat, eggs, and cheese. All right, so far so good. Now, are you average? No, not yet, because next you've got to take your family safely away from your house and then burn your house down to the ground. Give away your automobile or automobiles and other motor vehicles, keeping maybe a rickety old bicycle for personal transportation. And this, of course, remember, will put you in the privileged half of the group. If your garage is sufficiently small and shabby, this will be your new home. But if it is a typical suburban two-car garage, it would be entirely too big. So you tear it down and you use a small portion of the boards to tack together a one-room lean-to shack in your backyard. Use cardboard liberally, and torn plastic sheets will lend a note of excellence to your dwelling. With all your possessions under your arm, then, you move into that shack with all your children, pets, and perhaps a few chickens and maybe even a pig. Because you see, as Mr. or Mrs. Average World, you would plan to live exactly like this, and also you would plan to be hungry for the rest of your life. The bulk of the world's population lives this way, not just a few people here and there, but people all around the world, in southeastern Asia, in the subcontinent of India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Central and South America, even in places in Europe, believe it or not, and of course especially in the vastness that is China and Asia, the bulk of the population of the world. They are merely computer digits to most of us in the Western world, and by their thousands they die every single day. Hunger is a stranger to most Americans and Canadians. It wasn't so very long ago the silvery grain elevators that dot the Kansas wheat land and the farm belt, the grain belt of the United States and Canada were stuffed to bursting and overflowing. The government would even subsidize farmers, pay farmers not to grow more food and to let the land lie fallow. But no more. That's gone now. Suddenly, mass starvation on a scale never before seen is real, is not just a nightmarish possibility, but is already here. And that shock of recognition has finally jolted our supermarket two martini for lunch bunch, 2 hours for lunch, the reducing salon bunch, the people who are affluent and overfed, where obesity and being overweight is a common plight of many American and Canadian citizens. Finally, we're beginning to get the picture as we see what the news media is reporting to us in the Sub-Sahara Belt and many other parts of the world. But what is it like to starve? What happens day after day and week after week when your body doesn't get enough calories and enough of the nutrients needed to sustain that precious essence we call life?
When a human being doesn't have enough food, his body begins to burn up his own muscles and tissues for energy. His body literally consumes itself. His organs, his kidneys, his liver, his endocrine system, often cease to function properly. Lassitude and confusion set in, so that starvation victims often seem unaware of their plight. The body's defenses drop, and disease inevitably takes its toll. In fact, disease kills most famine victims before they have time to starve to death. An individual begins to starve when he has lost about a third of his normal body weight. But once this loss exceeds 40%, death is almost a certainty. But people who have enough calories can still die of malnutrition. The lack of protein kills tens of thousands of children each year in Africa, India, Southeast Asia, and parts of South America. The victims, whose tissues are usually swollen with fluid, develop a scaly rash and liver troubles, and their hair turns a coppery color. Most adults can come close to starvation and survive, but children who survive starvation remain scarred for life. No amount of vitamin D will straighten legs bowed by rickets. No amount of vitamin B can overcome the debilitating effects of chronic beriberi on the heart and other vital organs. No amount of essential proteins can ever undo the damage done to a growing child's brain by their absence. Brain cells require protein, and they need it from the very moment that life begins. At least 80% of all human brain growth occurs between conception and the age of 2. But if the mother is malnourished, if the infant is starving, brain development may simply never occur. Such individuals may be alive, but it is a living death. By the most conservative estimates, at least 460 million people are threatened with starvation today. 15 million will probably die this year, most of them children under 5 years old. Countless thousands of other children will be condemned to the twilight zone of permanent mental degeneration. And so, the hunger bomb ticks on.
May I take your order, sir?
The lady would like the fillet with lobster tail and drawn butter. And I'll have the rack of lamb.
Are you ready to order, sir?
Yes, the lady and I would like to have French onion soup. And for our main dish, we'd like Chateaubriand for two.
Okay.
That's close enough. Yes, I'll take the Wiener Schnitzel with French fries. Salad, I'll take the tossed green with Roquefort. And to drink, I'll have a pint.
All right, start off with, the lady will have the...
Famine. Can we survive? Take time out and call this number now.
The hunger crisis is easy to ignore. As a matter of fact, it's easy just to turn off the television set, and many people are tempted to when seeing pictures like these simply because they're unacceptable and they're shocking, and we feel they are over-sensationalized. And beside, statistics like 2% of population increase every single year seem so vague and so unreal, and it's such a tiny percentage. But added to 4 billion people, food production rises at 1% per year, population at 2%. You put these factors together, and you have the hunger bomb, and it's going to affect governments, and it's going to affect every country on earth, and it could be leading toward a world war. Can we increase our crop output? To do so, man must either, one, increase acreage under cultivation, or two, raise output per acre, or maybe a combination of both. But simply putting larger areas of land under the plow will not provide the answer to the food shortage. Much of the land in most countries is unsuitable for farming, too precipitous, rugged, and mountainous, and the soil is too poor. Only 1% of Australia is cropland, only 2% of Brazil, only 10% of China. The Amazon basin of Brazil covers over 1 million square miles, but only about 200 square miles are suitable for cultivation. Unfortunately, equatorial soil fertility is low. Most of it is laterite. A poor reddish soil leached of its quality by the heavy rainfalls of the region. Around the world, only 10% of the Earth's 40 billion acres of land area is presently arable. This makes for about one arable acre per person. Another 20% of the Earth's land is permanent pasture land. To increase food productivity, money is necessary. But Asia, with 57% of the world's population, has only 12% of the world's income. Africa, with 10% of the world's people, has only 2% of the world's income. It costs at least $1,000 to open up an average new acre to cultivation. In other words, it would cost at least $400 billion just to increase crop land by 10%. But who can afford that kind of money in countries which have a yearly income of $60 to $100? The Green Revolution, which only a few years ago brought hope of agricultural self-sufficiency to India and other countries of Asia, has quickly lost much of its promise. By 1968, there were some explosive increases in production of principal crops in those nations. But beginning in 1972, crop yields not only leveled off, but declined by 33 million tons. The UN's Food and Agriculture Organization abandoned its earlier optimism and replaced its usual enthusiastic claims with the terminology of disaster. Whether we want to admit it or not, for practical purposes, the Green Revolution is over. The Green Revolution has failed. No, man is not going to drastically increase his food production in the next decades. The potential for increased production is severely limited. And while the population continues to climb by 75 million people every year, food reserves have continued to dwindle to a frighteningly low level of only 26 days' supply. There is only one answer. Mankind must control population. If we don't, billions of people are going to starve. It's as simple and as ghastly as that. Every second, 4 new babies are born into this world. During this time, there are only 1.7 deaths. This means there are over 8,000 more human beings living on this planet every hour. Or you can term it as 70 million people added to the world's population every year. That's equal to the combined populations of Canada and Mexico. Recently, the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization estimated that 1 person in 3 is chronically hungry and that 1 in every 2 is badly nourished. Every day, 10 to 12,000 people die from the plague of hunger and starvation. Another 80 to 100,000 die due to diseases caused by malnutrition. Every day, the world has 213,000 more mouths to feed for dinner. As you sit before your television set, over 300,000 people in Bombay sleep out of doors with no roof over their heads. Another 500,000 in Calcutta sleep in doorways, holes in the walls, on streets, under cars, on benches, or under bridges. In Bangladesh, there are today over 1,300 people per square mile. By 1990, another 1 billion people could be crowded in the already overcrowded, teeming confines of Asia, struggling for survival. You know, people used to talk about the population bomb, which implied that maybe somehow somebody could pull the fuse or defuse the thing. Now they talk about the population explosion. Well, people are now talking about the hunger bomb, but we need to wonder what will occur when these teeming, starving millions, those who know it is impending, those who know it's an absolute certainty, those who have maybe a 29-year life expectancy on the average in a nation such as India, who know that unless the entirety of the conditions in the world change, political, military, as well as the distribution of food and the equal sharing of Earth's resources, that this is their fate. What will occur when the hunger bomb becomes the hunger explosion?
One of the enigmas of all time has been understanding the book of Revelation. For instance, the phrase, the four horsemen of the apocalypse, is common in our language, but few know the true meaning of these symbolic horsemen. This booklet, The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, brings you that understanding, if you dare to know. With biblical proofs, each of the horsemen is described and their meaning made clear. Religious confusion and misdirection, war and upheaval, drought and famine, disease epidemics. You can now understand what the four horsemen of the apocalypse mean and how you can escape their destructive forces. For this vital information, request your free copy of The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. Dial direct 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
Last November, the United Nations sponsored a World Food Conference in Rome, bringing together representatives of over 100 countries to discuss what can be done to ward off the threat of worldwide starvation on an unprecedented scale. The conference turned out to be a tragic and pathetic testimony of lofty platitudes, of blatant nationalism, and bitter denunciations. The UN's Roman debacle, as some sources called it, was an expensive exercise in international futility. The U.S. Secretary of State, Henry A. Kissinger, gave the opening keynote address.
Excellencies, distinguished guests, we meet to address man's most fundamental need. The threat of famine, the fact of hunger, have haunted men and nations throughout history. Our presence here is recognition that this eternal problem has now taken on unprecedented scale and urgency, and that it can be dealt with only by concerted worldwide action.
Kissinger promised that the United States would make a major effort to forestall a world food crisis and proposed establishment of an international system of nationally held grain reserves. But President Ford rejected as inflationary the U.S. delegation's request for a 1 million ton increase in U.S. food aid. Representatives from Iran and India and other countries as well began to blame the affluent nations for hunger around the world. Jajvin Ram, the agricultural minister of India, said, and I quote, "The condition in which the developing countries find themselves today has not been brought on by their inaction or lack of adventure. It is obvious the developed can be held responsible for their plight." You believe those words? You look around nations such as India, you wonder if maybe the British had pulled out of there somewhere back in maybe the 1600s, 1700s. Would they have even been in the 20th century by today? I frankly doubt it. I don't look around the world and see in Southeastern Asia, in countries all over Central and South America, the Sub-Sahara Belt of Africa, or any other area of the world, the obvious factor that the developed countries, the former colonial powers, can be held responsible for the plight of these peoples. China blamed the industrialized countries for causing the world food crisis and demanded that these nations shoulder the main responsibility in giving food aid to needy nations. The United States has been giving up to 84% of all of the food aid to other countries, many of whom rarely support U.S. policies, and some of whom openly blackmail the United States with quadrupled oil prices. The Braying Jackass Award goes to the Chinese delegation for daring to say that the United States is causing the world food crisis. The United States has been on an unbelievable giveaway program, and some people are hard put to even agree with Mr. Butts, who says he is proud of it. We have given the world up into the billions upon billions of dollars of aid, money, military aid, economic assistance of every kind, not only from private organizations in the private sector, but direct aid from the government, as well as direct massive shipments of food, even to the extent of depleting our own emergency grain reserves. Did you know that in the bomb shelters of big cities all across the United States, the former dehydrated and preserved food supplies for emergency survival of the United States in the event of atomic attacks has been taken out of all those shelters and sent over to Biafra? No, we don't seem to know these things, yet we can listen to some of these delegates of these other countries blame the United States and the developed countries for the world food crisis. We are not responsible for their birth rate. And you know, Mr. Butts said one thing concerning the papal speech or declaration at that World Food Conference, with which I can agree. He said words to the effect that if you know play of the game, you should not make of the rules. And you know, he got into trouble for that, so I'm only repeating what he said. Take it up with Mr. Butts. Vice Agriculture Minister of China, Hao Chunxi, delivering China's main address to the World Food Conference, made a stinging attack on the United States and the Soviet Union, and applauded the oil-producing countries for their victory over the West. But the poor fool didn't seem to know that that so-called victory over the West may mean imminent additional starvation for additional tens of millions of people simply because the skyrocketing price of oil to nations such as India, as a tremendous case in point, make it impossible for them to produce the food they need for their own starving people. He peppered his address with attacks on Washington and Moscow. He said, and I quote, "Facts clearly show that it is colonialism, imperialism, and the superpowers that have caused the present world food problem, and that the developing countries are the victims." And I say ridiculous stupidity. If China had devoted its attention to modernizing its agriculture program, and if, in fact, the Soviet Union had done the same thing, instead of both of them entering into an unbelievable massive arms race in trying to join the nuclear club and build up a gigantic super nuclear power to compete with the West, maybe they could have been a part of the feeding of the starving millions of the world, including their own populaces. But instead, the old guns versus butter issue is still alive and well in China. And as Hao Chung-shi tries to blame the West, he must look like some kind of a fool to be standing atop the mountainous piles of multiple millions of people over there who themselves oftentimes are malnourished and underfed because of antiquated 16th or 17th century farming methods that are utilized. He said a basic prerequisite was that developing countries should shake off colonialism, thus creating conditions in which they could develop their own agriculture and industry. And let me say that if developing countries, and I mean it sincerely, you can believe of me what you wish, had shaken off colonialism about 50 years earlier, they would be possibly not even 50 years behind. They may have retrogressed far further into the past so far as the development of their basic systems and agriculture is concerned. Algerian Trade Minister Layachi Taker gets the Braying Jackass Award for telling the conference that one solution to shortages lay in producing food to satisfy the needs of humanity instead of the requirements of speculative markets as now. And he said, and I quote, listen carefully to these words coming from a trade minister of Algeria who was a member of the oil-producing countries who joined the initial embargo and is a part of the price-fixing gang of the Arabs who have quadrupled oil prices. He said, and I quote, it was inadmissible that commodities needed for human survival should be used as a speculative and political tool. The hideous, gleaming tooth, bare mouth, ears laid back, bitten the teeth, you know, braying jackass award goes to this man, Layachi Taker of Algeria, for being so foolish as to not remember that oil is the very base for agriculture in practically any country you want to mention, with the conceivable exception of some few backward countries who are not mechanized at all. India, again, is a case in point. Oil. Not only to take the grain and everything else there, but oil, diesel, gasoline, petrochemical industries, the pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, and even the fertilizers that are oil-based. But he and his government make it almost impossible for these developing countries to afford the oil and then turn around and say it's impossible to use some commodity needed for human survival, thereby threatening the West we dare not retaliate by cutting down on our food shipments, which are 84% of the world's supply anyway, so far as aid given to foreign countries. Can you believe reasoning like that? Unbelievable, isn't it? During the Rome conference, Pope Paul delivered a major address on birth control, and our correspondent who was on the scene, Ray Kosanke, filed this report.
The Roman Pontiff addressed some 1,800 delegates and members of the press attending the United Nations World Food Conference in Rome. Reading his 40-minute speech in French from a throne-like chair inside the Vatican's massive and very modernistic reception hall, the Pope reiterated themes often expounded during the conference, such as, 1, the fact that man should not and need not suffer from starvation, 2, that the productive capacity of nature has been largely unexploited, and 3, that it is the responsibility of the world's rich nations to take care of the malnourished. But by far, the most striking part of the Pope's message was his stand on the inflammatory subject of birth control. He termed it inadmissible that those who have control of the wealth and resources of mankind should try to resolve the problem of hunger by forbidding the poor to be born. This is Ray Kosanke in Rome.
Well, when all the rhetoric was said and done, the rhetoric didn't feed anybody. But I'll guarantee you one thing, those delegates at that conference in Rome were eating 3 square meals and even more a day. They were wondering which restaurant in which they would discuss world hunger that afternoon as they flocked out of the meeting hall and went to some of the most glamorous restaurants on the face of the earth. Sitting there with full stomachs, well clothed with their pencils and pens and her gold glasses and spectacles on her nose, they discussed unbelievable world hunger and the portent for food wars that could send the entirety of humankind into unparalleled chaos. I strongly felt they ought to all be sitting naked somewhere in the sub-Sahara belt right in the midst of some of those little kids we saw, and that their table should be right there among the pigs and the chickens and the slop, and that instead of retreating to a very beautiful restaurant somewhere in Rome for their recess before they went back to discuss world hunger, they ought to eat that half of a rotten potato. You know, I think sometimes diplomats would get the job done a little better if they would simply put the setting of some of these meetings where the action is. But no, they chose Rome, and everybody went ahead, you know, to each meeting with a full stomach, and they didn't solve a single thing. All they did was use it as an empty sounding board to accuse one another for political purposes. There was an awful lot more food for thought than food for hungry bellies delivered out of that conference in Rome. If you want to see the true story of this whole world and the picture not only of biblical prophecy and the mysterious four horsemen of the apocalypse and a portent for growing world famine and political upheaval as a result, and also the question, can we survive impending famine? Write for these booklets you've seen advertised, the one on famine and the one on the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Until next time, Garner Ted Armstrong, goodbye, friends.
All literature offered on the Garner Ted Armstrong program is free upon request. Write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Canadian viewers write Box 44, Vancouver, BC. In the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, call 213-577-5225. Call now. The operators are standing by. If the lines are busy, please call again.